Hey everyone, husband here.
And I'm wife. If you've been listening to us, then you know we're all about reading the Bible and reacting to it on our first read-through. Cuss words, crying, laughing, and more.
We're passionate about creating a podcast that takes the sanctity out of the sacred text and simply stating it as we see it.
But we can't do it without your help. We're asking for your support to help us keep this podcast going.
There are two ways you can donate.
Text SACDIS, that's SACDIS, to 533-555 if you're in the U.S. with a one-time donation. Any amount helps.
Or if you'd rather start a sustaining membership, sign up on our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Membership levels start as low as $2 a month.
We are amazed and grateful for our fans that support us now, and you can become one too.
With your support, we can keep Sacrilegious Discourse alive and well for years to come.
So please donate today.
Text SACDIS to 533-555 if you're in the U.S.
Or sign up for our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
I'm husband.
And I'm wife.
Together, we're reading the Bible for the very first time.
We grew up without religion and wanted to know what all the fuss was about.
Well, what have we learned so far?
That God is a dick, and apparently some people believe in talking donkeys.
We're not trying to pass ourselves off as experts.
Nope, we're just reading the Bible for the first time and giving our first take reaction.
If you'd like to join us in this venture, you might consider starting at episode 1.
Otherwise, jump in wherever you like.
All right, let's go read the Bible.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Hey wife, did you know that Anchor is sponsoring our show?
Really? Don't we use Anchor to distribute our podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts?
Yeah, and we are on just about every other platform available as well, thanks to them.
Why do we use Anchor as our podcasting service?
Well, they make editing and distributing our show a breeze.
What if one of our listeners wants to start their own podcast?
Then they should head over to anchor.fm or download the app to get started.
Awesome! You guys should go do that right now! Husband!
Wife!
It's Saturday! Q&A!
Awesome! I love Q&As!
I do too! And once again, I caught myself saying, oh my god, this is so interesting! I can't wait to tell you about this stuff.
I always love, like, learning the little shit that we find about what we just read about, because, like, oftentimes I'm more interested in that than I am about the fucking Bible.
Yeah, so the trivia of history.
Yeah. No, yeah. I love it. I love it. So what are we, you got a breakdown of what we're talking about? I had a breakdown just now of fucking words, but do you have something to tell us what we're going over today?
Let me rephrase that for you.
Yeah, please. I didn't need that. Yeah.
What are we going to talk about today, wife?
Yeah, that.
We had a specific question. Why is the tribe of Judah differentiated from Israel?
Yeah, that one was bugging me.
I know. And then we thought, like, are we crazy? Like, what is happening? Did we miss something? Okay, I have an answer for that.
Okay, cool.
And we're also going to talk a little bit about that King Nahash that wanted to stab people's right eye out.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't get enough of him, and I was like, what is his fucking deal?
Got it. So, all right, so Nahash and Judah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, let's go do this.
Let's. Okay, so I know that your original question was purely about tribe of Judah being differentiated from Israel.
Right.
But I want to start with Nahash first because A is shorter and B, while it's interesting, it's not entirely a satisfactory thing.
Oh,
so it's okay. Just merely like interesting.
So you're saving the good shit for last?
Yes. That's exactly what I'm doing. Okay.
That's smart. That's smart. Like, if you want to keep people listening, you got to save that good shit for the end, right?
That wasn't necessarily my terms or my idea. Like, I just wanted to get it out of the way.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
Let me get to the good stuff.
Get the worst first.
Yeah. I got to eat my vegetables or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you remember Nahash. He was like, I'm going to poke all y'all's right eye out.
Yeah.
And they were like, but don't though. And then he was like, I'll give you a little bit of time to beg somebody to come help you.
Right.
And then,
yeah, that was the stupidest shit ever.
Yeah. And then you can either be our slaves or I'm going to poke your fucking right eye out. And they were
they were going to be their slaves and poke their fucking right out. Oh, otherwise, they were going to kill them,
I think. That's right. Yeah, I had that mixed up.
That's all right.
You're right. I was just trying to do like a real quick like refresher of what that was about.
Okay.
Okay, so I don't know if you recall, but there was a parentheses voice in that little section. And it was like, Nahash had been doing this to nations, blah, 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 blah. So it wasn't just them that he was doing it to. Okay. I should have probably copied down the exact whatever he said. But it was something to that effect. Okay.
Yeah.
To make us understand that Nahash was doing this left and right all over the country.
Got it. Okay. Got it.
So the strangely cruel terms that he gave were a usual practice. Like, historians agree that, that was happening. And the thing is, though, they discovered more about this when they discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I'm like, oh, we are so reading that when we're done with the Bible.
Yeah, well, I mean, that definitely. Among other things.
I know. It's just like every time the Dead Sea Scrolls come up and how it's like, you're missing part of the story.
I remember that being so interesting when I was like, it was maybe when I was in high school.
I was in high school, so it would have been like middle school for you maybe.
Sure. Yeah. But I remember being like so intrigued by that, like, wow, they found like stuff from that time.
Yeah, I was just blown away. I couldn't, my mind was exploding. And I didn't even know anything about the Bible.
Right, me either. Yeah, but it was still just
the history of it was so intriguing. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
You found fucking thousands-year-old scrolls in a goddamn Bible-y cave stuff. Somewhere?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And I didn't even at the time understand the controversy over whether or not it should be included in the Bible.
Right,
like,
right.
I had no idea. I was like, wait, there's Bible things missing?
That was maybe my first, you know, exposure to understanding that there were things that were Bible, but not Bible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, what? What the fuck is this shit?
Exactly. Like, I just always thought, like, oh, the Bible's the Bible. What?
Right. Yeah.
That's it.
I never knew that before.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just really excited about whenever we do dive into the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Sure. Yeah.
So there was an introductory passage preceding the narrative about Nahash.
Okay.
That was found in the copy of the books of Samuel among the scrolls.
Ah,
that
were
found with the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to read this instead of summarizing it. It's a short paragraph just to, like, give you guys an idea of what it says.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Nahash, king of Ammonites, would put hard pressure on the descendants of Gad and the descendants of Reuben and would gouge everyone's right eye out. But no rescuer would be provided for Israel, and there was not left anyone among the children of Israel in the Jordan whose right eye Nahash, the king of Ammonites, did not gouge out. But behold, 7,000 men escaped the power of the Ammonites, and they arrived at Jabesh-Gilead. About a month later, Nahash the Ammonite went up and besieged Jabesh-Gilead.
Huh. Okay. I wondered about that. And the reason I wondered about that is because at some point earlier, they had said that they had gouged out their eyes.
Yes.
And then this time they were saying that he's going to gouge out their eyes and then didn't because they won the battle.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't understand what that is. It seemed like that's much more clear. That makes a lot. Why didn't they include that in the fucking Bible?
It seemed like Nahash came out of nowhere. What? Who's this guy?
Yeah, no, that actually provides clarity.
Exactly. Like he had been around. So the way that scholars summarize this little passage that I just read.
Yeah.
In other words, Nahash had conquered the tribal lands of Gad and Reuben.
Yeah.
And a portion of the population had fled from him to Jabesh Gilead. And that's why he lays siege to it.
Got it.
So he didn't just, like, pop up overnight and be like, I think I'm going to attack them.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot more sense.
Yes.
A lot more sense.
Yes. And I just thought, oh, my God, that is so interesting.
And it explains, it was just a nagging thing in the back of my mind about the people that had already lost their eyes versus this thing that happened. And it occurred to me, but it didn't, like, I was like, whatever. It's the fucking Bible. It's, you know, whatever.
It was too esoteric to chase down that portion. And, like, the eye gouging thing wasn't what I was looking up particularly.
Sure.
I just was like, hey, you know what? We've never heard of this guy except for in this one bit where he comes out of nowhere. I'm curious about him.
Right.
And I just, like, on a lark, looked him up.
Well, because we find some of our best stories from just looking up these random names.
Exactly.
And be like, who's this?
Who? What? Was he? Did he do a thing?
Right.
Yeah. And I guess he was like a guy that did the things and warred on them.
Well, I'm glad you looked that up.
Me too.
I mean, it does lend a lot of clarity to the story that we were reading. So
right. They had been warring him for ages.
Right.
Which we knew that they had been warring the Ammonites and the Amalekites. We knew that. But this made them more of a people over there.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Like, instead of just this random blodge of a group. You know?
Right. What's a blodge exactly?
It's a a flump.
It's completely clear now. I totally know what a flump is.
It's a snarfblat.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. It's getting clearer by the minute.
If you have watched Little Mermaid, you know actually what a snarfblat is.
I have watched it, but I don't remember that bit.
Oh my God! At the very beginning of The Little Mermaid, she's combing her hair with a fork, and she's like, what is this? And the seagull tells her it's a snarfblat.
Ah.
Yeah, because he makes up shit just, and passes it off. Because he's totally a Republican.
Right.
Like, he's like, I know the answer to that question, and makes up one so that he can then say that, see, I knew the answer.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I got it.
Okay, so now let's go on to the tribe of Judah.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Part of this is going to be hard because it gets into the chapters we haven't read yet that we're about to read.
Okay.
So I had to, like, stop myself.
Got it.
From reading too far ahead.
Right, right.
But the tribes of Judah and Benjamin did not agree at all on proposed kings.
Okay.
Not the idea of kings, but who should be king.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so, as a result, they totally split.
I have a question, though.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the tribe of Benjamin so powerful that they were strong enough to choose a king after all the shit that happened with the tribe of Benjamin?
It's not that they were powerful. It's that the northern 10 tribes, including Benjamin, remained one people.
Okay.
And Benjamin was like the closest to Judah in the layout.
Got it.
And so they were the ones that argued the most vehemently.
Got it.
So
they became their own little nation state, basically.
Yeah. So the tribe of Judah became a kingdom of its own. Throughout history, they actually had two different kings. Kind of like when the Pope split from Rome and went to Constantinople.
Yeah.
And there were two popes.
Right, right.
You know, and it's like, which one is the real one?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, neither or both.
Right.
Well, that's kind of how this was. They're all Israelites, but Judah became the kingdom of Judah.
That's interesting that God stayed silent on that whole matter.
Right, isn't it?
I mean, to me, it's interesting because God apparently picks kings.
Yeah.
And he just let there be two kings, apparently.
He did.
Didn't care.
Well, you know, people help themselves, etc. God's plan, I don't know. I'm not Christian, so I don't know.
God's not real, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get into a little bit of a history lesson here.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So you know how as we go through, we learn about the different things that were actually happening in the world at that time?
Yeah.
So also it relates to like different portions of the Bible as how they're grouped.
Okay.
You know, like the Deuteronomistic history
right? Yeah.
There's a thing called the United Monarchy.
Okay.
Okay? And that's the name given to the United Israelite Kingdom of Israel and Judah during the reigns of Saul, David, and Solomon.
So okay? This is like a, even though they had different kings, they kind of backed each other type thing?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
You can see why, though, it was kind of dicey as far as I just said Saul, David, and Solomon. We're only in Saul.
Right.
Right? Yeah, which is the book of Samuel.
Right, right. But now we know why it's still Samuel, because, you know, Saul got fired.
Right.
So.
Right. Somewhere between, or all through 1047 and 930 BCE.
Okay.
The country split into two kingdoms. The
okay.
kingdom of Israel, including the cities of Shechem and Samaria in the north. And the kingdom of Judah, containing Jerusalem, in the south.
Okay.
And that those dates are, like, not nailed in stone, but generally speaking, they agree that about 930 BCE is when that happened.
Okay,
the
got
split.
It.
Okay?
Yeah.
David, whom we will not meet till, I think, the next couple chapters, or even maybe 2 Samuel, I'm
okay.
not sure.
Right.
He's coming up shortly.
Sure.
Okay? And we've heard of, like, David and Goliath.
Oh, this David.
Yeah, that David.
Okay.
Exactly.
Got it.
He lived during the Iron Period. So we are reaching the end of the Bronze Age, I guess.
Right, we're going into the Iron Age?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. And that would suggest that he was not, given the time period.
Yeah.
It would suggest that he was not a king of a centralized kingdom, but rather a chieftain over a small polity in Judah.
Huh.
And the different kings that they had throughout were either in the north with Judah, or I'm sorry, with Benjamin,
right,
and all them,
yeah,
or in the south with Judah.
Got it.
And so that kept them at war with each other.
Oh, so they were warring
themselves.
They were warring with each other.
Yes.
Wow.
For ages.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, that's where I didn't get into this a lot because, like I said, I had to cut myself off.
Sure.
Apparently, that's where the terms Samaritan came from because they were considered to not be fully Israelites.
Okay.
Like, they were only half.
Okay.
Because they were cut off.
And what, good Samaritan is, like, somebody they consider, oh, you're all right.
No.
Or what?
A Samaritan is a group of people. It's a peoples.
Okay.
And the Good Samaritan, we're going to get into that story. I think that's a New Testament story.
Oh, okay.
But the Samaritans were supposed to be at odds with the Jews, but the Good Samaritan is there was a Jew who had fallen in the street, and a Samaritan came over and helped him up.
Oh, okay.
He was a Good Samaritan. And
got it.
We now use that term to mean a good neighbor.
Right. But it becomes clear that it was somebody they thought poorly of that
yes.
did something good.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so it was used as a disparaging.
Right.
During this time.
Right.
So, and I don't know why I know that Bible story, but it does kind of, it
I
is
didn't
kind
even
of
know
relevant.
That Good Samaritan was tied to the Bible until you brought up Samaritan, and I was like, well, is that part of the Bible?
Yep.
And I guess
yep.
maybe
that's
it is.
That's where that
so, yeah.
term comes from.
Okay.
It's funny because it's kind of like that one poem, a tall fence a good neighbor makes. You've heard of that poem before?
No. Well, yeah, I mean, I've heard that saying before.
It's from a poem, I forget, Frost Emerson, one of those sure. great American
okay.
poem
yeah, yeah.
poets,
right.
whatever. And so people take just that one term and think that that means, see, we all need to have our boundaries and our tall fences and
right.
then we can be good neighbors. But actually, that's one line from the poem, which is entirely opposite to that, which is saying, you know, we built all these walls, but aren't we good neighbors?
Right.
You know, even
right.
though we're cut off from each other, blah, blah, blah. It's just another example of how we have a phrase that we use that is actually quite contrary to where it came from because people just repeat these things ignorantly.
Right. No, I mean, yeah. So, definitely.
Yeah.
You could still, the stuff that was made up last century, we could go on a
stuff that was made
tirade.
Up last Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So, okay. So, Iron Period we're in. And so, he was a chieftain over a small polity in Judah, which was disconnected from the Israelite tribes of the Northern Kingdom.
Okay.
Okay. So, when we get into David, the Bible is going to have us thinking like he is the king of the Israelites.
But
the
he's
king
not.
Of, yeah. I mean, he is, but he isn't.
Right,
like,
right.
Not all the Israelites are on board with
he's
this.
He's a king of some of the Israelites, but not the
yeah.
other Israelites.
He's a king of the smaller portion of
right.
them. The
okay.
the not viewed as good ones or whatever.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay. Now, archaeologists fiercely debate this still today. And scholars are divided among those who support the historicity of the biblical narrative.
Okay.
Which is, you know, what we were just talking about. Versus those who completely deny the existence of the United Monarchy.
Huh.
And versus those who support its existence but believe that the Bible contains theological exaggerations.
Got it. Okay.
So, there's...
No, the Bible exaggerates?
Right?
No way.
So, but there... What that is saying is that there's a question among scholars, among some scholars, as to whether or not they were ever actually united.
Got it.
So
they might have been fighting the whole time. Or didn't actually split. Or, well, I guess they did split, but...
Well, some say, no, that split never happened. Okay. And others say, no, that split totally fucking happened.
Got it.
And I would tend to believe that because they were a warring bunch of fuckers.
Yeah, they really seem like they loved killing people.
They loved killing each other.
Yeah, that too.
And, I mean, think about how we came to the terms East Side and West Side Gang.
Right.
Right? That was the first split. Not even the first split, but the first one where we actually named opposite sides.
Well, and they apparently got left out there to die when they got attacked by this Nahash guy.
Exactly.
So, you know.
So, I totally, if I had to pick, I have no, obviously, facts to base one or the other, but if I had to pick a side, I would say that, yeah, they totally were always separated. But the Bible downplays it.
Got it.
Because they're all Israelites. They're the kingdom of Israel.
Right. We got to play it like God didn't do anything wrong and didn't, you know, I mean, if there's two sides, then God has to pick one.
Yes.
And if we don't want to pick one, we have to pretend like there's not two sides, right?
Yeah. Or that it was one of those times when the two brothers were fighting.
Right.
They eventually made up because, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They just downplay it.
Right.
So according to the biblical account, the United Monarchy, where they're, you know, like one nation, was formed by a large popular expression in favor of introducing a king to rule over the decentralized Israelite Confederacy, which, you know, we know that.
That's right.
What we read.
Yeah.
So increasing pressure from the Philistines and other neighboring peoples is what forced them to unite as a state after the anointing of Saul by Samuel.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, even if they were at war, they had to, you know, be like, okay, but we are still Israelites, and let's kill them before we kill each other.
Right, this is a higher precedent than fighting each other.
Sure, so,
yeah.
And I mean, the Bible did kind of get into that, actually.
Yeah, but they didn't spell it out.
They,
you know?
They spelled out the part where they were united in getting into it with the Philistines.
Yes.
But they did not spell out the fact that, but they were not happy with each other.
They left out the backstory.
Yeah. And Israel and Judah are portrayed in later sources, like the Dead Sea Scrolls, etc.
Okay.
As a quite distinct kingdoms.
Ah.
Completely separate.
Interesting.
So we thought maybe it was just like a weird translation or like a misreading of something somewhere, or that we didn't get it.
Sure.
And it turns out, no, that was a great, excellent question, because Judah was entirely separate from the rest of the fucking Israelite countries.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And even maybe they've, you know, rewritten it enough to where they've tried to dull this down to make it seem like they weren't fighting at all.
It wasn't that big a deal.
Right.
Maybe they fought a little bit, but you know.
Hmm.
Yeah. So can you
just
see why I
was
like...
It doesn't fit that narrative of God very well.
It really does not. But you can see why I was really excited to get into that today.
Yeah. I think that these stories that come up that are out there, like the Dead Sea Scroll stuff and things that are out there in story form but not in the Bible, that are in other texts that are still available, I feel like they're not in there because they don't work with God.
Well,
like,
it's
God
true.
God is not compatible with these other stories.
It's true.
And they have to, if they want to keep a religion, they have to have this compatible story.
There was an entire book of the Bible removed by, I think, King James, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
There was an entire book removed because it had mention of Jesus with a wife and children, and that did not fit their narrative of him as a spiritual son of God,
right.
Like not
human. He's basically God, but the human form.
Yeah.
Right.
And that painted him as merely human, and that would threaten the power of the church over people.
I'm betting in a more original text that Jesus might have been more of just a prophet than anything else. Like a serious prophet, but a prophet nonetheless.
Well, I mean, that's the way the Jewish view him. He was just a prophet.
Sure.
He existed. He's a great dude, but he was just a prophet.
Right.
And there are, I forget if it's the same book that was removed or if it's like a different book where it was mentioned that his wife was actually on the board of his disciples.
Oh, okay.
And that could not...
Was it Mary Magdalene?
Might have been. That tracks, but I don't know for sure. I don't want to get in over my head.
Yeah,
but
we're stretching here for our knowledge here.
Yeah. But they had to remove that because that would have shown that women did hold leadership positions in the time of Jesus.
Right.
And they could not have that.
Of course not. Yeah, you got to subjugate those women.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's a very important thing.
Yeah. Which is funny because, like, I just saw somebody shared a tweet that somebody had, tweeted. They had screenshot this, and the original tweet was this woman saying that sometimes she gets sad because her husband gets all of her paycheck and has to give her permission to spend her own money that she earns, but we are put here to serve our men and to... subjugate ourselves. She used this term.
Wow.
Subjugate ourselves to them. So
I can't imagine speaking in those terms. Like, I just can't imagine that.
I have to subjugate myself to you.
I mean, you and I have an agreement that we share all expenses and share all purchases, and
sure.
We talk about all of our things. You know, but even if we didn't do that, and we had separate money. I can't imagine saying I'm getting all your money and I'm going to take care of it, and you're just going to work for me.
Like, my best friend and her husband, they both work full-time, and they both have separate accounts and separate credit cards and everything.
Right.
But they split up who pays for what bills and, you know, who takes care of what. And they are in conversation about these things regularly. And it's not that he gets her money or he takes her money.
Right.
Because she... you know, for quite some time was making more money than he was. So
yeah,
it would like, I'm sorry, what? Excuse you?
Right.
So, yeah. And they're older millennials. So, like, this younger generation, more and more women, I'm so glad to see, are, like, taking control of their own finances. Not in a, I'll be in charge of the whole thing kind of way, but just in a, I can do this myself, thank you.
Yeah.
And it makes for a better partnership.
Definitely.
I think.
I mean, we had a lot of discussions about it early on in our marriage about how we were going to handle this and what was best and
all
that.
Well, because when we were both working full-time, you made more money than I did.
Right.
But you brought home less than I did because you were paying for insurance.
Right.
So what I brought home was actually more than what you brought home.
Yeah.
But it was really good partnership because we both got to feel like we were equally contributing.
Right.
And it all went into the same account.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the younger generation, they seem to keep their accounts very separate.
Right.
Which, you know,
and
whatever works.
Yeah, do what you gotta do, you know, that's fine.
I mean, we need like every penny added up together to be able to pay things.
Right.
So
yeah.
That would never work for us, but
yeah,
more power to those who. Yeah, I don't know how we got off on this. Other
I was
than,
gonna say we've been talking for 5 minutes about finances.
Well,
so.
It's less about finances and just more about a partnership, and not just a partnership between husband and wife, but a partnership between anybody in any relationship ever. You should be equal. Nobody should subjugate themselves.
Right.
And if you find yourself in a situation where you are giving up your rights or your monies to your partner, whether they are same sex or otherwise, you need to seriously question, you know, what you're wanting out of your life and your situation.
Right. Yeah. So, I agree.
There's that.
So that's about all we had today then?
Yes. Sorry. That's all we I was just so psyched that I'm like, blah, 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 blah.
Right. No, I got you.
Sorry.
All right, so we learned about Nahash and Judas today.
Yep.
So,
not Judas.
I said Judah. I thought.
Well,
I think I moved on to something. Yeah, I slurred it. So,
yeah.
But I meant to say Judah.
Yeah, Judah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But tomorrow is going to be our what do we call
weekly
it?
Weekly replay.
Weekly replay.
And then Monday we will be back for 1 Samuel chapter 16.
Yep. We'll see you guys then.
Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end?
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.